touchdown machine for the Houston Cougars.
Sasser again, just kind of taking over right now.
That's NBA stuff right there. He is a baller.
Stick it in your pipe and smoke it, baby.
Yes! Welcome to Scott Blum Podcast. Wherever you are, whoever you are, let me lead off here tonight by giving a big hearty thank you for making the choice to listen to us talk about all things Houston Cougars, whether this is your first episode or you've been with us for the last 7 years. We truly and really appreciate you, and we also appreciate we have a slate of pretty exciting stuff to talk about tonight. A few different sports, seeing fall action, of course, Cougar football opening up their conference schedule on Friday night. Dustin, my friend and co-host, there's competition, but what are you most excited about in the week to come for Cougar sports?
Man, I gotta say, I'm excited to watch this Cougar volleyball team continue to be in action. Not to jump too ahead of something we're gonna talk about here in a little bit, but really excited about the season that they're having. And not to jump the gun, but a couple of matches I think they can win this week, which would set up a hyper exciting matchup against UCF if we look ahead a little bit. So really excited to see what the Cougars are able to do on the volleyball court continuing this week.
No doubt, of course, gotta recognize top here. We are oh so proud members of the 1012 Network as a soon-to-be Big 12 podcast. Do follow them on Twitter if you've not done so already, at TEN12 Network. Check out the 1012 podcast wherever you put podcasts in your ears. And, of course, all the great school-specific pods that are with us on the network, including Tortillas and Takes from Texas Tech and the Rock Chalk Pod from Kansas, who we had guests on from earlier this season. Really enjoyed those gentlemen's insight. And, of course, we are brought to you tonight by the good folks at The Good Brand, the destination for premium vintage collegiate apparel, Homefield Apparel, homefieldapparel.com. I always mention it here because it is just that awesome, but Homefield's refreshed Houston Cougar collection is a must-have, chock full of really awesome Cougar designs, including multiple Sailor Cougars, and they have an awesome Phi Slamma Jamma tee from their original UH collection as well, and you could save on these and hundreds of other schools. Fantastic wearables. Use the promo code HOLMAN12, HOLMAN12. That'll get you 15% off your first order. No matter your school of interest, that promo code will hook you up with the savings. Homefield's also done some fantastic releases in the past week, doing a number of current Big 12 school releases, including a really nifty Iowa State football tee, Dustin. They have the old-timey sigh and an old-timey football getup that may have copped earlier this week. My first foray into Iowa State wearables, and some really nifty UCF and USF designs to add to those existing collections as well. Great stuff as always going on at Homefield, so use that promo code HOLMAN12, get yourself some great looking wearables at homefieldapparel.com, and do support our show in the process. So we should probably start the Cougar news with some big but not especially good news, specifically that Cougar defensive end Derek Parrish has been ruled out for the rest of the 2022 season due to a torn biceps that he suffered in the first half of last Saturday's game against Rice. I think it was reported first by Mark Berman, confirmed by Holgerson on Monday's usual weekly media availability. Never want to see any player have their season ended early, in particular not Parrish, with what he's given you this season and, you know, in recent seasons past. To see him through the first four games of this one, one of the best UH single game defensive performances you'll see, the 4.5 sacks against Texas Tech, doing everything he can. I think worth reminding everyone, he's doing it with basically one hand, clearly a guy who had taken a big step forward from what was already a very impressive 2021, and kind of a bummer, Dustin, that we're not going to see him in uniform this year and may not see him ever again, because a really great player and a guy who just really left every single bit out on the field. You never had any kind of doubt about what kind of effort you're gonna get from Derek Parrish. I'm gonna really miss that this year, and might really miss ever seeing that again.
Yeah, it's a tough loss. Obviously, you know, you hurt for the player first and foremost. The guy who's just absolutely obviously worked his absolute butt off to not get the chance to go out and finish the rest of the season with his teammates. Just, you know, there's no two ways about it. It sucks. And, you know, it hurts from, you know, hurting for him. And it also obviously hurts from the team and the coach and the fan perspective, as you're just not the same defense without Derek Parrish, a guy who, like you said, is, you know, in a non-conference run of four games that wasn't always the most fun to watch as a Cougar fan. Derek Parrish was always fun to watch. Just that guy was an absolute menace this year. Just, you know, really just unblockable force, and just going to be very, very disappointing the rest of the year as Houston, you know, now turns their attentions to conference play. You know, that's certainly someone that you expected to be one-year leaders as you, you know, try to put together the best AAC campaign you can, try to still make a run at a conference championship in your last year in the conference. That was supposed to be one of your big building blocks defensively. And definitely, you know, I think there's other talented players at that position, you know, De'Anthony Jones, Nelson Caesar. Maybe this is a chance for someone like Nadeem Tucker to step into a bigger role. But you really just can't sugarcoat that losing someone like Parrish, as good as he's been, is just a huge blow.
No doubt. And you can talk about the depth of this position group, kind of like we just did. You got Nelson Caesar, De'Anthony Jones, and just a lot of guys that this staff has recruited, a staff that has shown an ability to, you know, evaluate pass rushers and defensive linemen generally from levels below this current one to this one, and who can project, but just never going to be as good as a unit would be with Derek Parrish, full stop. I mean, this is complete speculation. It's too early to say one way or the other, but Parrish has only played 4 games this year. I think getting, as much as I know or can predict any of these things, I would feel like getting awarded an extra year of eligibility is possible. He redshirted and did not play at all his first collegiate season, 2017. That's how long Derek Parrish has been in college, Justin. His first collegiate season was Major Applewhite's first season at U of H, and like everyone else, he didn't have the 2020 season counted against his eligibility, so he hasn't had a medical redshirt previous to this one. But I mean, he could also decide, of course, that whatever pro prospects he has are worth pursuing immediately, and I don't think anyone, certainly not me, would blame him if that's the path he chooses to take. I think, above all else, it bears repeating, I think we just hope he's able to recover from this injury as quickly and effectively as possible, whatever he decides or whatever life has in store for him for the next year and beyond.
I did see someone had tweeted that, I think it might have been at the coaches show or something, that Holgorsen had said that he believed that Parrish was leaning towards not trying to come back for another year next year, although not that a decision had been made, but maybe it was leaning not, and that Malik Robinson,
very
the linebacker. Yeah.
Seven years is a long time to play college football.
For sure. But Malik Robinson, the linebacker, who also unfortunately looks like has been ruled out for the year, was leaning towards coming back and using his extra eligibility next year. So something to keep an eye on. But yeah, not to mention not only losing Derek Parrish, but losing Malik Robinson at linebacker, and Holgorsen kind of hinting that there may be some more defensive players who are going to be ruled out before it's all said and done against Tulane this weekend. So yeah, just not... You know, for a defense that has had some strong suits to be sure, but has also had some vulnerabilities this season, seeing, you know, not only Derek Parrish, but potentially losing multiple starters on the defensive side. Not what you want to see, certainly.
Yeah, certainly not.
All right, and we will talk about more about that Houston game against Tulane as our main story a little bit later in the episode, but first want to talk about some other Cougar sports in action, some other fall sports going on. Mentioned up at the top, Cougar volleyball continuing to look really impressive. They beat Cincinnati 3-1 in their conference home opener, a match I was lucky to get to see this past weekend. Bearcats, you know, we mentioned the preview, came into this one with a poor overall record, but had generally played teams closest in losses, and they actually also beat Tulane in their conference opener, same as Houston did. Cincinnati actually beat the Green Wave in 4 sets, whereas it took Houston 5. So, you know, we said last week that despite what was ended up being a 3-8 record by the time that they made it to the Fertitta Center, you shouldn't expect a runaway, and we didn't get one. The first 3 sets all finished with just a 2-point deficit, with the Cougs taking sets 1 and 3. And then fortunately, in set 4, the Cougs were finally able to really separate themselves. They really took control midway through that set, ended up taking it comfortably 25-17 to win the match. And it was really good to see Houston get a win in a match where Abby Jackson didn't have her best performance by far. And Cincinnati was clearly focusing on her. But that didn't matter because Houston just kept feeding their middle blockers. Isabel Toit continuing her offensive renaissance as a senior had 15 kills to go with her 4 blocks. Rachel Tolis narrowly missed a double-double with 10 kills and a ridiculous 8 blocks in this one. And even sophomore Kellen Moore, and this sophomore transfer from Virginia Tech in her first season with the Cougs, had her first double-digit kill performance, an impressive 11 kills with just 1 attack error on 20 chances for a cool 500 hit percentage to go with her 3 blocks as well. And I really liked what I saw from her. It was just a, you know, fairly small sample size, but you know, with Toit a graduate student this year, with Tullis a senior, with a year of eligibility remaining that she may or may not choose to use, I think it's really exciting to see someone that you're pretty confident is going to be there next year, looking ready to step into a bigger role. And then certainly the other standout I wanted to mention from this one was Kate Georgiadis. In addition to reaching the 20 dig plateau for the 3rd straight match, she was absolutely lethal with the serve, and this one had 6 aces and no service errors. Really was giving Cincinnati fits. But as much as I was excited about a lot of things from this match, you do have to mention the somber note as well, which was, I believe it was in the second set when super senior outside hitter Kennedy Warren went down with what appeared to be a leg or some type of lower body injury. She ended up sitting at the edge of the bench for the next set or two with a trainer before eventually leaving for the locker room. So obviously we're hoping for the best for her, and that hopefully it ends up being something non-serious. It certainly was a scary moment at the match. But you know, really the whatever the opposite of a silver lining to a cloud is, the little bit of a dark pall hanging over what was otherwise, Sam, I thought a pretty solid match from the Cougs.
Yeah, hopefully it's not something serious or something that Kennedy can rehab from in not too long of time. I think wasn't able to really see what was going on as well watching from home, but yeah, it seemed kind of serious at the time, and obviously hope that she's okay. And like you, I think I was pretty excited that this one didn't go to five sets, because I almost kind of mentally prepared for that, because I mean, this is a good opponent. This is an opponent that took Pitt, who's one of the most consistent volleyball powers out there, to five sets when those teams played earlier this year. This is not your typical 3-8 team. I don't think we will see two definitively better teams in conference play this year than the Cincinnati Bearcats. Obviously, UCF. UCF is the gold standard of this league. UCF is going to be the best team you see in conference this year, and one of the very best you see in the season period, but Cincinnati is quite good. That record shouldn't have fooled you. They took care of Tulane in a lot quicker order than the Cougs did in their conference opener. So, yeah, I think excited that the Cougs really separated themselves in that fourth set. I kind of, like I said earlier, resigned myself to it being five sets, and also resigned myself to it being an extremely close match throughout. So it's nice to see the Cougars kind of take control late there and make it a maybe less dramatic win than we expected. And I think just a good proving this team's mettle. And just, it can't be overstated just on how just gifted Rachel Tullis is at the net. Like, she's not, I don't think she has the raw size of Kellen Morin, who I like you, I was pretty impressed by. I thought she was a really nice standout and someone this program is going to certainly be building around in the future, but doesn't have that kind of natural size. But like David Rare said when he was on with us a couple of years ago, she's just such a natural at the net.
Yeah, so the Cougar volleyball program taking their East Coast trip this week, as they'll be at East Carolina on Friday and at Temple Sunday, 11 a.m. Pirates 5-9 overall against not a super tough schedule, and they opened AAC play with losses to Tulsa and Wichita. The Temple Owls 6-7 overall, also not against a super tough schedule. Also opened AAC play with losses to Tulsa and Wichita. These were two pretty bad teams, two of the worst teams in the conference last year. And Houston played them both home and home last year, and they swept three of those four matches, but they lost in five sets at East Carolina. One of the really bad losses, a couple of bad losses for Houston that helped keep them out of the NCAA tournament. So definitely two matches you want to win and you expect to win even on the road, and you know, definitely a chance at some measure of redemption for last year. None of that, but a chance to have your first two-match winning streak in the head-to-head series with East Carolina since the Conference USA days. So, yeah, even though you're taking a pretty lengthy road trip out there, Sam, definitely a couple of matches you hope to see the Cougs be able to win to get to 4-0 in conference.
Yeah, I was thinking about these two teams that, you know, when I think of ECU and Temple Volleyball, I think of two, one of them you already mentioned, two bad losses the Cougar program has taken in the last two seasons. You mentioned losing in Greenville last year, the Pirates, one of the bad RPI losses the Cougs took to a not very good ECU team that season. But I'm also remembering from the spring 2021 season, the Cougars saw their season end in the AAC tournament against the Temple Owls, a team that they were really superior to during the spring of 2021 season, but the Cougs just couldn't get out of their own way in the conference championship there. So yeah, I would like to see the Cougars go 2-0, and I think should expect with the veteran presence on this team to go 2-0 against the slave opponents, even away from home, even considering the lengthy road trip, like you said.
Yeah, and speaking of Cougar Fall sports teams taking on East Carolina, the Cougar soccer program was in action this past week, dropping a 1-0 result to the Pirates. Definitely disappointing result after the conference opener win against South Florida, against an East Carolina team that Houston just cannot seem to get past. Their third straight 1-0 loss to the Pirates, the fourth straight match in which they have not scored a regulation goal against the Pirates. So definitely, extends an unwanted streak with having a hard time with that program. But I guess maybe the best thing you can say is that we don't have to face them ever again for any reason.
I suppose so. I feel like I'm back here for the umpteenth time in a row to talk about a 1-0 loss by Cougar soccer to ECU, in which the contest was decided on a later in regulation goal, though this one was admittedly, I would say, a bit less dramatic than maybe the previous couple of losses in this series. The Cougars actually came out of the gates a lot stronger, I thought, as the visitors in this one. They had a couple chances in the first 20 or so minutes, a chance by Adriana Hudson that really looked like it was going to go in off of a corner kick. It was a real nice clearance off the line by a Pirate defender. And then in the 17th minute, Cougs really looked like they'd set up Janice Singleton nicely to have a one-on-one with the ECU keeper. Unfortunately for the Cougs, some great last-ditch defending turned that opportunity into a harmless deflection for a corner kick, which Cougs unfortunately weren't able to do anything with in the immediate aftermath. ECU, kind of after that point, seemed to control play a bit more. Final 20-something minutes of the first half, though, I wouldn't say they really had any better first-half chances than the Cougars did, and this one went to half scoreless, and not really surprising that it was scoreless. There was a lot of, really, in the first half and the early part of the second half, a lot of either team controlling the ball for stretches, but not really much end product, not really much incisive attacking passes once the buildup got a bit close to the opponent's goal. A lot of passing between the two goal areas, but not much once it got close. It really did look for everything watching it live like this one was going to be a scoreless draw, but I kind of spoiled how this one ended earlier. The 69th minute off of a corner, ECU's Jasmine Ferguson headed the ball into the top left corner, gave the Pirates an advantage that they would ultimately not relinquish. And just, I watched it live. I've rewatched it a couple times since then, and the header was a really nice, well-played shot in a difficult-to-save spot for the Cougar keeper. But I also counted two or three Cougar players who, to be quite frank, shouldn't have allowed it to be so easy for Ferguson to have a pretty unimpeded header on the goal. Though it was a nice play off the corner. You got to give the Pirates credit there. Can't just say it's entirely about your team. But Cougs couldn't make much happen, unfortunately, in the final 20-plus minutes. And for the last time ever, left Greenville after a 1-0 defeat. I think you had a real impressive, I would say, offensive showing against USF in your prior conference game the week before. This one, the Cougs only created 3 total shots, didn't have a single one on target besides that Adriana Hudson shot that I mentioned cleared off the line a few minutes into the game. And I think it's also kind of glaring that we're now, Dustin, over halfway through the regular season schedule, and this team still doesn't have a clean sheet against any opponent of any kind. For comparison, the Cougs had 9 clean sheets in last fall season. And this is an ECU team good enough to have beaten SMU on their home field, perhaps the league's best team in Dallas a couple weeks ago. But this is an ECU team that's a top 25 postseason caliber kind of team. And I think it was kind of frustrating for me to see the Cougs once again not look like they had very many attacking ideas in, I think, what was at least potentially a winnable contest.
Yeah, I think, you know, kind of the 1-0 loss to East Carolina, who's having a pretty strong season, like you mentioned. Devoid of context, it's not the worst thing in the world, but it's that context you mentioned. It's the not creating, you know, other than the one at the beginning, really any appreciable offensive chances. You know, it's losing to the same team 1-0 over and over again in kind of repetitive fashion. It's the complete lack of clean sheets this fall for the Cougar program, and that's why it's definitely, you know, a loss that kind of stings and bums you out a little more than, like I said, kind of devoid of context, maybe it would.
So up next, the Cougars are going to travel to take on one of the more consistently excellent AAC soccer programs, the Memphis Tigers. If you'll recall, we've talked about a fair amount in this show, rightfully so, but when these two teams played in Houston in the regular season last year, the game was a scoreless deadlock, looked pretty destined for overtime until Nadia Kamasa closed out on Memphis's goal kick, deflected it perfectly into the back of the net, gave the Cougars a 1-0 advantage, and ultimately a big home win. Tigers did get a little bit of a measure of revenge. They beat the Cougars 1-0 in the semifinals of the AAC Championship, and record-wise, I would say this Tiger team looks like they've taken a bit of a step back from 2021, but they've played a lot of good teams in the non-conference. Their first half of the season ended up a bit heavier in matches away from home as well, so you have to kind of consider that. Weirdly enough, they're on a run of 3 straight ties currently, including their first 2 conference matches against UCF and Cincy. And like the Cougars, Memphis did graduate some key athletes from a year ago. You've seen maybe a bit more positional instability. I think they had a 3- or 4-year starter at keeper last year. They've had 3 different keepers start a match this year, though Claire Weivel seems to have won the job for conference play. Just bottom line, this is an opponent that UH has struggled with historically. Last season's win was the first in almost a decade, and the Cougars haven't won at Memphis since the 2012 season. So this Memphis team maybe isn't on the same level as the last couple seasons of Memphis team, but I'd still be pleasantly surprised seeing what I've seen from this team, certainly away from home, if the Cougars can get a positive result on their own this one, because Memphis is still probably one of the, you know, three best programs in the league, and I'm not sure U of H has shown that as of yet.
Yeah, this game just kind of has you know, maybe a 1-0, 2-1 loss kind of type of feel to it. Just it is a Memphis team, like you said, hasn't looked completely invincible this year, but at the same time, just it's a team that consistently every year has one of the biggest, you know, most athletic, most talented programs in the conference, and you'd expect them to be that again, and just. I don't know. This feels like it's a match where Houston comes in and even extends that Memphis draw streak. Certainly on the road, I'd be pretty happy with that one. You know, obviously any win, I'd be over the moon with. But yeah, I don't know. This also has disappointment feel, because you know, I think Memphis is a talented enough team. You never know whether they're going to put that together. And you know, if this is another 3-0 Houston loss like we've seen a few of this year, that could really kind of sour what has been an otherwise, you know, at least semi respectable start to conference play through the first two matches. All right, and then the last sport that we did want to mention that is in action in the fall before we get to a little bit of men's basketball in the Tulane preview is the Cougar women's golf team. And Sam, they were in action in their second fall tournament. And, you know, we keep saying this, but it's getting harder and harder to follow our own advice on this, Sam. I'm trying really hard not to overreact to how the Cougar women's golf team is looking, because they have been pretty impressive thus far through a couple of fall tournaments, and not only impressive, but led by a trio of freshmen who are having very strong starts to their college careers.
Yeah, I'm like you on that one. Just fresh off that really impressive showing in their opening event last week in College Station, Cougar women's golf, like you said, back in action this past Saturday through Monday at the Schooner Classic in Norman, Oklahoma, and the Cougs finished alone in fourth place out of 16 teams in the field. Like you said, a trio of freshmen led the Cougars, kind of like they did in the opening event. Natalie Saint-Germain, off of a really fantastic opening event, was the Cougs leader once again, finished tied 10th among all individual competitors, thanks in part to a monster program record setting final round. She shot a 64 on her final 18 holes, had a ludicrous, and I'm not the biggest golf knower, but I know 5 birdies in your first 9 holes is a pretty good round of golf. Didn't ultimately have a single bogey in the final 18 holes. Only one other competitor in the day, Iowa State's Carissa Chulock-Sorn, even equaled Saint-Germain's final round score of 64. Saint-Germain had an, you know, awesome round that obviously played an enormous part in the Cougars as a team staying in the upper part of the leaderboard as well, because a lot of teams had really good final rounds. I think Iowa State, who I just mentioned individual from, was like 12 under. A lot of teams had good Mondays in the Cougars. The Cougars, I think in the past, like, you've seen them have a first good day or two in the tournament, and then, you know, that day three rolls along, they kind of drift back to the middle, lower middle part of the pack as other teams have great final rounds. And it was the opposite. The Cougars had one of the best team rounds of the day. And I think, obviously, big credit there goes to Natalie Saint-Germain, who I think it's hard to tamp down expectations when, you know, again, not going to overburden a first-year college athlete with really lofty comparisons, but all I'm saying here, I'm only saying facts, that she did something on Monday that an incredible golfer like Leonie Harm, who we covered for a lot of her UH career here, didn't do in her 4 seasons in the program, or a recently departed professional and All-American in Karen Fredgaard either. Neither of them did what she's done in her first 2 events, but don't want to make it all about her. Had a couple of other really good freshman performances as well. Moes Svedenskiold, nailed that. I think I got that the first try there. Had a really impressive event herself. Finished just a stroke behind Saint-Germain at 2 under par for the event. Also tied her with the team lead with 11 birdies over the course of the event. Alexis Aldana, another freshman standout from a week ago, finished at even par for the event. Was under par for her first 2 rounds as well. I think I, you know, it's noteworthy the Cougars really took care of business. I kind of dug into golf stats, deeper stats on this one. Really took care of business on the par threes, your short yardage holes. Had the lowest scoring average on par threes among all teams in the event, making up for maybe being a bit closer to the middle of the pack on the par fours and fives. But Cougars finished ahead of some really good ones. Finished ahead of the hosts Oklahoma, as well as future Big 12 fellow programs. Iowa State, Baylor was just one stroke behind what's a perennially good Oklahoma State program. Like we've said a lot in just a few minutes here, don't want to go overboard about 2 fall events, but I think it's worth comparing what this team has done through this fall's 2 events versus last year's. Heck, it's an easy comp, Dustin. This team played in this very event that I just got done talking about, the Schooner Classic a year ago, and almost a year to the day, the Cougars with a tournament 5 last year that was almost all upperclassmen, finished 13th out of 15 teams in that field. And, you know, For other sports, I might have a bit more long-term concern about first-year athletes being all of your top performers, but golf's different. And I'm not saying these golfers, you know, coming from, you know, the European and Saldana's case, the Mexican amateur ranks, won't see some tougher courses than maybe they did as amateurs, but it's different and I think a lot more sustainable for a sport like, say, golf or swimming or track and field to really see first-year athletes carry team results and you're not thinking, okay, but when's the speed of blank gonna, you know, catch up with? When's the, you know, grind of, you know, a basketball season or something like that? That's not really applicable here. And I think that's really exciting. It makes it easier to, you know, fully buy on these two events being indicative of a real strong turnaround from Cougar women's golf.
All right, so very excited to keep our eyes on them going forward. And speaking of some youngsters going from some freshmen to not even a freshman yet, we want to talk about Cougar men's basketball picking up a verbal commitment from Jacob McFarland. McFarland, a 6'10 center from Moreno Valley, California, in the Riverside area, in the class of 2023. McFarland choosing Houston over other finalists, Georgia and Wyoming. From what I read, it kind of sounded like McFarland went from somewhat unheralded to kind of shooting up the recruiting rankings pretty quickly. The 24/7 composite has him at number 140, but I've seen him as high as, you know, top 80 in some other places, which I think also kind of explains Wyoming being in his finalist. They were one of the few schools that looks like it had actually been recruiting him for a long time, but eventually when, you know, if Wyoming's your best offer and then, you know, schools like Georgia and Houston come along, you know, that certainly gives you some better options. So Cougs able to add him to the fold. So very excited about this ad, Sam, and continuing Houston's, you know, strong recruitment of some really impressive prospects as they head into the Big 12.
Yeah, we're really starting to see that class of 2023 take shape with him, JoJo Tugler and Cordelius Jefferson as well. Just reading the experts' assessments of him, just that he's listed at 6'11 and a hair over 200 pounds, it does sound like he's going to get well acquainted with strength and conditioning coach Alan Bishop. And even without knowing exactly what this roster is going to look like in 2023, I would be surprised if McFarland is a guy that features a ton in his first season on campus. But I mean, you could also understand why a nearly 7 foot tall guy with plus athleticism and room to put weight on his frame would be a really intriguing ad for Kelvin Sampson. I think that future front court of McFarland, JoJo Tugler, and JVA Francis, I think those guys would be cornerstones. That's a front court, obviously not a lot in terms of proven Division I commodities there, but guys I think are going to be cornerstones of the program and guys who I think as long-term projects is going to be a really exciting front court and really exciting to see that next stage of Cougar basketball with those guys leading the way up front.
Absolutely. You mentioned, you know, Tugler and Jefferson already in the 2023 class. That gives Houston the number 11 class in the country in the 247 composite. And that is even with, you know, I think McFarland is someone that we're likely to see, you know, his composite ranking continue to, you know, go up as maybe some other ranking services kind of refresh their rankings.
Yeah, we've seen that with JoJo Tugler since he committed to U of H. I think he's risen almost 50 spots on 247's ranking of him now that teams have gotten more of a chance to see it. Dare I say it, Dustin, are we in the era, you know, that was one of those long gripes for years and years, you know, player X would get an offer from Blue Blood and be like, oh, well, he's a 4-star now because he committed to X school. Are we in, truly in the era of a Cougar recruiting bump, Dustin? I'm half joking, but the fact that I can even talk about that, I think is very funny and just where this program is versus where it's been for many years and just tickled pink that Cougar basketball is this unbelievable power that when someone commits to U of H, it's like big news outside of even the U of H community.
It's funny you mentioned that. I had that exact same thought this week when I noticed that JoJo Tugler was all the way up at number, I think it was 58 in the 247 composite. And then Mercy Miller, who has been, you know, committed to the Cougs for a while in the 2024 class, you know, he committed initially when they didn't even, I don't think, had class rankings because he was still just a sophomore. They only, you know, were ranking 20 guys or something like that. But he is top 50 in the 2024 class in the 247 composite. So I'm having that same kind of thought. You know, I don't hate it, but I mean, it's when Kelvin Sampson is your head coach and he's been as successful as he has, you know, when he recruits a player, it's kind of it's kind of like, oh, well, you know, if Kelvin Sampson likes him, he must be a pretty good player. So don't hate having that that kind of reputation. And obviously it doesn't, you know, you don't win anything for getting a player with the high recruiting rankings, but like I said, just certainly seems like the staff is continuing to, you know, not only know what they're looking for in terms of athletes, but being able to recruit continually, you know, maybe slightly better athletes each year.
No doubt. going to mention real quick here before we get to Cougar football and their opponent for Friday, the Tulane Green Wave, really dive into that. Opponent, wanted to mention, though, real quick that UH Cross Country is back in action this coming Friday. They'll be at the Chili Pepper Festival hosted by the University of Arkansas. So we will be back there to talk about what the Cougar distance runners did in Arkansas sometime in about a week. But no delay further, Dustin. Let's talk about the Tulane Green Wave. And I think kind of where my thoughts start on them is that, you know, we've talked about in the show, it feels like every AAC team this year outside of maybe Cincy at the high end and Temple at the low end is kind of an enigma. You don't know exactly what you have from them, or you have some of the same questions that maybe you had in the preseason that haven't been answered. I don't think the Cougars are any exception to that, certainly. But Tulane still is no exception to that. And, you know, most of the advanced metrics look at this game between the Cougars and the Green Wave, look at it like a coin flip, very close margin kind of game. And that can't be simply attributed to U of H kind of having a slow start to the season. I mean, I think at times Tulane's really unmistakably shown themselves to be one of the more improved teams in the sport, which is not to say they haven't done some kind of enigmatic things to get off to that 3-1 start, but I'm not sure any current AAC program has a louder win than Tulane going into Manhattan, Kansas, and getting a very ugly, but also very deserved win over K-State a couple Saturdays ago. Yes, that was followed up by a pretty inexplicable loss last Saturday to Southern Miss, and a game that for the first quarter and change looked like it would be a runaway Green Wave win. I was watching that one, Dustin, because it's on the ESPN Plus archive, just to kind of get an idea what Tulane looked like. And at one point in the early second quarter, they go up 14-0. I'm just like talking to myself, because my partner at this point is long since asleep. I'm just like, how did they lose this game? Like, for all, it looks like they were going to just absolutely run away with that one. Lost a kind of inexplicable one last Saturday. What I will think is going to be one of the more statistically unlikely losses you see a team take in the 2022 season. So, like the Cougars, this is an opponent who hasn't been the most consistent on one side of the ball. Like the Cougs, Tulane's offense has been pretty hit or miss. And, you know, not necessarily easy to figure out through the first four games, but I would still say, unlike the Cougars, I think this is a team that's shown itself to at least be a proven commodity, at least be quite good on one side of the ball. And that's what I think kind of scares me the most about seeing Tulane on Friday night.
Yeah, I think if, like you said, early second quarter against Southern Miss, if you had just stopped the count right there, then I think Tulane would be maybe the one team in the American that you'd say through the first four games has just been a pretty unmitigated positive, you know, coming off of a two-win season to have, you know, okay, they beat up on UMass and Alcorn, no big deal, but then you mentioned stunning K-State in Bill Snyder Family Stadium. But then, yeah, just 0 second-half points against Southern Miss until the final 20 seconds when they got a touchdown when the game was already effectively over. Just, yeah, a very, very stunning result and not kind of what you expected from this Tulane team that looked like they had really figured things out through the first, you know, three games and 20 minutes or so. But, you know, definitely concerned about this one, concerned about how Houston matches up. And you know, mentioned the hit-or-miss offense. And like I said, going almost the entire second half without scoring at home against Southern Miss is not a very good sign. But there's certainly some pieces there that you like. I mean, Michael Pratt at quarterback, you know, someone who can really throw the ball around. Tulane hasn't done a great job protecting him. You may remember U of H sacked him 8 times in New Orleans last year. Southern Miss just got him 4 times last week. You know, but at the same time, you know, can Houston regularly pressure him with no Derek Parrish? And can Houston, when they're pressuring him, regularly bring him to the ground, which we've seen them struggle to do? And he's someone that I think is capable as a scrambler, can definitely escape some pocket pressure and gain some yards. So, you know, it's someone where you'd like to think that Houston's going to help themselves stay in the game by consistently getting pressure on Michael Pratt and having a Tulane offense that's been pretty spotty this year continue to look that way. I don't know. I'm afraid of the reality that we might be in, which is the one where Michael Pratt is just able to slip out of pressure consistently, and Tulane makes this Houston defense look like one that's missing some key guys through injury.
And we're not even getting to the fact that this Tulane defense is going to go against Cougar offense that I don't think through either its first four games has proven it could put a 60-minute performance together. If you had told me Tulane was going to be a decent amount improved over last year's 2-10 season, I don't think I would have been too surprised by it. We didn't have them that high in our preseason rankings, but if you told me there could be a 5 or 6 win team, I wouldn't have thought that was that crazy. That kind of was the standard under Willie Fritz prior to that. I don't think that's closer to what they've been more consistently the last 4 years than last year's 2-10 season was. I think that season was more of an outlier, but that they've looked as good as they have at times, primarily because of a defense that was mostly abysmal last year, I think that's been pretty surprising. And yeah, some of those numbers are skewed a bit by playing two cupcakes to start the season, but I don't know, considering how tough their schedule last year was, I think you can't blame them too much for maybe wanting a soft land to start the season. I think it might have actually been a stroke of good fortune for this team coming off a tough season to start with two easy wins, get the winning feeling back, get the confidence back. You know, so much of college sports, sports in general, is confidence and having a winning mentality. And if you believe SP Plus is any indicator, Tulane is going to be the best defense we've seen so far in 2022, slightly edging Texas Tech at 59th coming into the week. I thought this was a wild random stat, Dustin. Through four games, they have not allowed a single first quarter point, which doesn't make me feel warm and fuzzy inside, given how we've seen the Cougars kind of either start slow out of the blocks or, you know, maybe start fast, but then kind of, you know, get in a rut at the end of the first quarter and second quarter. Just, they haven't just been a good defense. They've been a good first half defense going against a inconsistent Cougar offense that's been particularly bad in first halves this year. And yes, you look at the overall result, Tulane lost to and surrendered 27 points to Southern Miss at home, but you peel back the layers on that one. USM got 7 points on a pick six, only had to go over 50 yards on one of their scoring drives the entire game. I mean, you look at the Green Wave's tally, they allowed 253 yards and under 5 yards per play. That should be enough to win a game 9 times out of 10. And that the week prior against K-State, an offense that, you know, had just dropped 40 points on Mizzou, would drop 42 in Oklahoma last Saturday, held them to 10 points and 4.6 yards per play. That's loud, Dustin.
Yeah, that is a certainly very impressive performance. And like you mentioned, barely a top 100 defense last year. You know, you open the season allowing 10 combined points to UMass and Alcorn, okay, whatever. But yeah, holding K-State to 10 points right before the Wildcats went and then just scored at will in Norman, that was really, really impressive. And you mentioned the reason why the Southern Miss result isn't as bad as you maybe think is just seeing, you know, giving up 27 points and losing to Southern Miss at home. Yeah, really, really impressed by this defense. Something that, you know, if you had told me before the season going into the Tulane game, I was really going to be frightened about the Tulane defense, that would have been, you know, a little bit surprising considering, like I said, how they performed last year. But, you know, holding, you know, keeping Deuce Vaughn, I thought, reasonably in check when, you know, up in Manhattan, you know, making Adrian Martinez not really look all that efficient in the pass or the run game before he looked like he could do whatever he wanted in both aspects against Oklahoma the next week. You know, it's a frightening performance. And, you know, even like you said, Southern Miss held to, you know, under 2.5 yards per rush on the game. Really a pretty strong defensive performance despite the final score there. So, you know, for a Houston offense that hasn't done a great job of establishing the run, I'd be really surprised if they're able to go out and then just really kind of do what they want to do in the run game. And then, you know, is Clayton Tune able to gonna have kind of a more efficient and or explosive performance than we've seen for him through 4 weeks? And is this Houston passing game going to look a little bit more, you know, fleshed out and competent than it has? You know, I'm not wildly confident that's going to happen. So I think this is a game that Houston is probably going to have to, you know, keep Tulane in the teens and 20s, because I think that's probably where the Cougars are going to end up at.
Yeah, I just want to mention with the defense some particularly impressive individuals. I thought also really impressive that they've been as good as they have after, you know, losing a four-year starter, one of their better recruits, interior lineman Jeffrey Johnson. He grad transferred to OU. Adonis Frelu, a one-time Cougar commitment, one of their top defensive tackles, out for the season as well. And this Tulane defense's strength, I would say, or their biggest strength, is the experience. They're very veteran at just about every level. But I think what's probably making Green Wave fans most excited in the long term is they have a pair of sophomores up front, Eric Hicks Jr. and Parker Jenkins, who have been the Green Wave's most active defensive lineman, but never a bad thing to have really good collective experience in your back six or seven guys, pair of senior linebackers, Nick Anderson, Dorian Williams, and DBs, Larry Brooks and Macon Clark. Clark, I think, actually started his career as a safety, is currently the number 7 rated cornerback in the country, according to Pro Football Focus. And if you'll remember last year, this wasn't a good defense, but this was an opponent that did a better job of taking Tank Dell out of the Cougar offense for long stretches of this game last year. And you ultimately, in that one, you needed guys like Keshawn Carter and Jeremy Singleton to step up and win the 2021 version of that game. I don't know if this Cougar offense so far has shown itself to be capable of overcoming Dell getting taken out of the game. And I think they'll need a change on Friday night if the Cougars don't want to take the loss here. And I will say, for all the superlatives, this isn't a green wave defense that's rushed the passer terribly well. 4 sacks in 4 games, and 2 of those games against pretty bad competition. I don't think looks great. The Cougar offensive line, I thought, had one of their more complete games of the season against Rice, despite missing Patrick Paul for a pretty good stretch of that one. I mean, just watching Tulane football, that's out there. This is a tough, veteran, sure tackling unit, and none of that probably makes you any more confident about this game if you're a U of H fan, having seen what the Cougar offense has and largely hasn't been able to do through 4 weeks of the season. I think, yeah, no uncertain terms, going to take U of H's best offensive showing of 2022 to really put up serious points on the Green Wave offense. And like you said, probably this needs to be a game played in the teens. And, you know, I want to get back to Michael Pratt, not an elite speed guy, but really smart runner, a guy who will make U of H pay if he's not effectively spied in the run game. And I know their offense has been inconsistent, but what kind of scares me is that, you know, we're still talking about, you know, a defense that struggled with the twofold monster of an opposing quarterback who can run a bit and then kind of getting beat for big pass plays. And this week, we're facing a quarterback who can run pretty well and is averaging almost 10 yards per pass attempt. I think that's giving me a little heartburn here in the pregame.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, feel a little bit better watching, not, you know, to keep beating that into ground, but the pretty woeful second half performance against Southern Miss. But you feel like this is not a Tulane offense that Houston's going to shut out. And this is a Tulane offense that is, you know, even if they have some, you know, if I think Houston's going to force some 3-and-outs. Houston might force a turnover or two, but you know, I think this Tulane team is going to put up some points as well, which is definitely concerning because, like I said, I think points are going to be hard to come by for the Cougars offensively. You know, I guess my last thought is I think it's just really kind of an interesting, for lack of a better term, vibe check for both teams. You know, both teams are coming off of matchups against local rivals last week, and you know, despite Tulane losing and U of H winning, you know, and one of our Tulane friends on Twitter, I forget which one, I should have paid attention to which one, mentioned this. He goes, man, Tulane's coming off of a loss to their rivals. Houston is coming off of beating their rivals. Why does it seem like there's such a better energy, basically, around Tulane than there is Houston right now? And this, you know, not to keep harping back on the things we talked about in the Rice recap episode, but it's certainly not a Houston camp that I would say you feel overly optimistic with that program and what's going on around there right now. And Tulane, this is certainly, I think, a program that's still has every reason to believe that, okay, we hit a speed bump in the second half there against Southern Miss, but we've still shown some really impressive things. We're really on a bounce back season from last year, and I think it's going to be coming into TDECU Stadium on Friday with a lot of confidence. So yeah, I'm really kind of nervously confident to see how many injuries we end up in total seeing on that Houston defensive side of the ball. And then, yeah, just like I said, this is a Houston team that's going to have to come out with, you know, maybe wounded pride, wanting to prove something wrong, wanting to make a statement, wanting to really go out and kind of defend their pride. Because I think if they don't come out with, you know, playing with absolutely, you know, bringing their A game or something approaching it, I think Tulane is going to have a great chance of giving the Cougs a loss to open conference play.
Again, there's a reason SP Plus basically has this a coin flip, why the Vegas line on this is U of H only being a 2.5-point favorite most places you look. And that's about, you know, Tulane as much as it's about U of H and what they've shown through 4 games, and, you know, not just about U of H's disappointing start to the season. Yes, this opponent was a 2-10 team a year ago, but I think Cougar fans should really flush that out of their minds. This is a team that just 2 weeks ago went into the packed stadium of a good top 25 Big 12 team, outplayed them and beat them. If they can do that, they certainly won't be overawed by playing U of H this year. And I think for me, this game is really an inflection point for this version of Cougar football. You know, the players and coaches have said, not incorrectly, that all of this team's big picture goals are still in front of them for the 2022 season. No matter how frustrating those Tech and Kansas losses were, yes, this team is still 0-0 in conference, still has a chance to win the league title and finish your time in this conference on a high note. And you may not remember this, but the fifth game of the 2021 season was also kind of an inflection point for that year as well. The Cougs were 3-1 heading into a roadie to play at Tulsa, but if you'll cast your mind back to about 12 months ago, it was a pretty unconvincing 3-1. The Cougs had beaten 3 varying degrees of bad teams, Rice, Grambling, and Navy. All those, you know, at Homer and Houston had taken that pretty decisive week 1 loss to Texas Tech. I don't think anybody was that confident in U of H outside of the locker room, and yet that team went up to Tulsa and absolutely smoked them. And from then on, it just felt like a different kind of season. It wasn't, you know, the last, you know, there wasn't no more adversity after that, but it just felt kind of like you just said, kind of like that the vibes had been kind of shifted on that season. And this team has the ability to go out there on Friday as, you know, one of the few nationally televised Friday games, go out there, beat a good opponent, and show people that no matter that slow start to the season, this is a U of H team worth taking seriously down the stretch to contend for the conference title. But it won't be easy. And, you know, the kind of subpar sloppy effort that we've seen for a lot of the last 4 weeks, I don't think will be met with mercy by an opponent who I'm sure would love for the last head-to-head contest between these teams in a long while to be a Cougar loss.
All right, and I think let's go ahead and leave it there. Sam, you ready to talk about some other Week 5 college football?
Let's do it.
So I got to say, man, Thursday football has been disappointing this year, and that continues to be the case. Your two games on Thursday, South Carolina State at South Carolina, and just a woefully pretty bad Utah State team at BYU. So not to sound repetitive each week, but, you know, go spend some time with your loved ones on Thursday. Do not make college football part of your plans. Friday, obviously, you're doing that with the U of H Tulane game. Not the only interesting game on, for sure. Right kind of in that same time slot, UTSA at that Middle Tennessee team that is certainly going to be riding a high coming into that one, heading off of the win at Miami. So, you know, for a UTSA team that is kind of dinged up as well, you know, Middle Tennessee, I think this is a game that preseason this would have been a UTSA favorite, but curious to see how our friends the Roadrunners do in their CUSA opener against a Blue Raider team that's going to be playing at home and, like I said, playing with a lot of confidence.
Yeah, since that week one just butt-kicking they took to James Madison, who obviously does not look like your typical first-year Division I FBS program, Middles look pretty good. It wasn't just that Miami game being a fluke, and UTSA, I would say, is a good squad, but you know, I would say Middle hasn't been on, you know, a bigger high as a program in a good, good long while, if ever, in the modern era, than beating Miami, you know, beating Miami at Miami and beating them pretty soundly. And UTSA, as much as any game in conference has juice, I know Middle, you know, lost a close one at the Alamo Dome last year. And UTSA does have that target on their back as a team that won the league and won 10-plus games last year. So that'll be an entertaining one. I think I'm going to out here try a second screen that one with, obviously, the Cougars getting the big screen. And a pretty good Pac-12 one later, too. Washington at UCLA. I don't know if UCLA has proven that they're, you know, really anything other than a team that's, I think, beaten, you know, four bad teams prior to this one. But they were a pretty solid team last year. Washington has been one of the early surprises. You know, I think if it was at Washington, I might not be as optimistic. I might think that, you know, is destined to be a 2 or 3 score Washington win, but I don't know. Washington goes on the road. Strange things happen. You go on the road. And I think that might actually be a pretty entertaining one later in the evening.
I was going to say, Vegas only sees that one as like a 2.5-point edge for the Huskies. So definitely one interesting between two 4-0 teams there. Man, I did want to say how disappointing it is that this is not a good game. San Diego State at Boise State feels like it should be a good game when you mention those two teams, but two teams that have not really impressed so far this year playing on Friday. So kind of playing third fiddle to, you know, maybe the other G5 games in that early time slot. And then, Sam, I have a feeling there's one other game on Friday you might want to talk about for at least a little bit.
Yeah, the UNLV Running Rebels, a secretly decent UNLV 3-1 to this point in the season, hosting New Mexico, who I don't think is especially good. It was very weird, Dustin, to see UNLV be a 14-point favorite in a conference game of any variety. I think the books out here are probably not going to be slow to figure out that the school 2 miles away has gotten at least decent football again. 10 p.m. Central kickoff. I don't think I will be out at Allegiant in person, but if you are having trouble sleeping or just are really jonesing for football around 11 p.m. Central time, UNM, UNLV has you covered.
All right, and then you'll be able to enjoy your Saturday college football slate without having to worry about your home team Cougs, as they'll have played on Friday. Some interesting games in the 11 o'clock slot in terms of a couple of really interesting Big 12 matchups, especially I'm keeping an eye on. Texas Tech will be at Kansas State. Two programs going to be riding on an absolute high after their big wins over UT Austin and Oklahoma, respectively, last week. So this one, definitely, I think the Wildcats can be favored with this one in Manhattan, but certainly, you know, two teams that I think are going to be, like I said, feeling really good about themselves, 1-0 in Big 12 play, and, you know, one of these teams is going to be feeling really, really good with a 2-0 start. After this one, you know, in a couple of teams that maybe you wouldn't traditionally expect to be the front runners in the Big 12, but two teams that are, I think, going to feel like they have, hey, we can make a run at a Big 12 championship, you know, game appearance if we have a 2-0 start to conference with the teams that they'd have beaten at that point.
Yeah, and I think I'm excited for the offensive contrast in this one. You have Tech, who I would say is closer to Mike Leach's air raid in terms of, you know, what they do concept wise and the, you know, volume of passing they do versus us. Most air raids have almost gone to a 50-50 at this point, and that, you know, that Zach Kittley Tech air raid's a bit closer to what Leach used to run in his heyday. In K-State, does a lot of really interesting stuff in the run game with Adrian Martinez and Deuce Vaughn. That's going to be really exciting. I think the one that's going to probably get my big screen for that 11 a.m. Central slate.
Very intrigued also by Oklahoma at TCU, though. The Sooners obviously coming off of the loss last week. Now they have to go on the road. They have to face a TCU team that's 3-0. And I don't know if TCU has faced a defense that doesn't suck this year, because they've played Colorado, Tarleton State, and SMU. But they've certainly looked capable of putting up points, and that OU defense has certainly looked capable of giving up points. So, man, if the Sooners lose this one and all of a sudden they find themselves 0-2 in Big 12 play, then, man, just the number of jokes that people are going to get off about the Sooners stumbling in their final Big 12 season and or stumbling in their first year of the Brent Venables era is certainly going to be a plenty.
Yeah, I'm betting TCU would have preferred K-State not going to Norman and beat their butts last week. I think TCU is going to be getting OU's real undivided attention. But yeah, I'm excited to see what Brett Venables can do against TCU offense that looked really intriguing last week in the Iron Skillet game at SMU.
Some earlier AAC games going on, but I don't know if I can get myself too worked up about Navy Air Force or Temple Memphis or ECU South Florida. I feel like I have a pretty good idea that those games are going to go to Air Force, Memphis, and the Pirates, respectively. But I don't know if any of those teams, I mean, other than Air Force, has looked pretty good this year. So, you know, I mean, that's the one good team that I would say of those matchups. But other than that, I don't know, Sam. Not terribly compelled by any of the early AAC action.
Yeah, I always try to tune in for the Commander-in-Chief Trophy games. Just, and nothing else, just because I like watching two option offenses face off against each other. If nothing else, Air Force is pretty good this year. I know they lost kind of an inexplicable conference game, I think, to Wyoming a couple weeks ago, but they're pretty good. I don't know if Navy's especially good, but Navy did go into ECU's house and beat them, an ECU team that I think we thought, at least before that, was pretty good. So I don't know. Crazy stuff happens in Commander-in-Chief games. I'm going to turn on alerts for that one and maybe second screen it if it's a close, compelling game in the third or fourth quarter there. And yeah, I wanted to also just mention, unrelated to the game itself, I really hope everyone in Florida is doing okay. The hurricane bearing down the state. You know, Dustin and I are quite familiar with just how terrible that could be, dealing with the hurricane, dealing with the aftermath of a hurricane. So we're sending positive thoughts to all of our Florida friends. I believe USF moved that game from Tampa to Boca Raton to get it in. So hopefully able to do that. Hopefully in the aftermath of less terrible than thought effects of the storm.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely sending our thoughts out to our friends in Florida, hoping for, you know, the least, certainly there's going to be damage, but certainly hoping for the best case scenario there in terms of, you know, everyone staying safe. Getting into that afternoon slate, you know, continue
strong
to
afternoon
kind of
slate, real strong.
Yes. Yeah. And again, another, you know, I think where the some really compelling Big 12 matchups are leading the way. And I think you're really, even as Houston is not quite there yet, you're just looking at this Big 12 slate is like, oh, yeah, this is, it's getting my juices flowing in terms of what a fun competitive conference this is going to be. Because you've got another couple of really intriguing Big 12 matchups in the afternoon. And I'll not be a total homer and start with, you know, the bigger deal one, which is maybe probably Oklahoma State at Baylor. A couple of really strong teams, a couple of teams ranked up in the top 20 already this year. Oklahoma State up in the top 10, Baylor number 16 in the AP poll at the moment, despite the earlier loss to BYU. Oklahoma State 3-0, and you know they're 3-0 top 10, but I think haven't looked completely you know, without, you know, some maybe, you know, weaknesses that can be exploited. So with this game in Waco, not too surprised to see the Bears a slight favorite in this one, despite having the loss on the year that Oklahoma State doesn't have. But you know, two teams that are going to feel very, very good about them. You know, we're going to probably say this about a lot of Big 12 games, but two teams are going to feel very, very good about themselves in terms of the Big 12 race if they can get a W here.
Yeah, and it's a different kind of Oklahoma State team than last year's. Maybe a bit more of a typical Mike Gundy team in that they're pretty explosive offensively. I think I'm pretty excited to see what that Oklahoma State offense can do against the Baylor defense that, you know, it's been pretty consistently excellent since Dave Aranda got there to Waco. I don't think you'd be a homer, though, if you had Iowa State Kansas next, though, because I think that's a really exciting one. Speaking of, you know, offense defense matchups, I'm really excited to see that Kansas offense that uses a lot of motion, a lot of misdirection, uses Jalen Daniels' unbelievably gifted ability as a runner against Iowa State and what John Haycock does there and the 3-3-5 stack and the, you know, kind of what Iowa State does that's very unique and interesting and generally does well against offenses that try to spread you out. So I'm excited to see what answers the Jayhawks have for the always salty Cyclone defense and maybe see if Hunter Decker's on the other side can make hay against the Kansas defense that has obviously improved, has obviously been good enough to, you know, support them being a much better team, but would certainly be the second best of Kansas's primary two units.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, Iowa State coming off of that loss to Baylor in the Big 12 opener last week. And, you know, you look at Kansas as your rebound, you think maybe most years that's kind of your rebound game, but definitely not the case. Really, really intrigued by that one as well, obviously. And I think even if I was not an Iowa State homer, that would be a game that I would be keeping an eye on just as a college football fan. Also in that afternoon slot, got to throw at least one G5 game out there, Georgia Southern at Coastal Carolina.
Got that one as well,
I'm really interested in. Yeah, Georgia Southern, obviously the win this year over Nebraska. They're 3-1 on the season. Coastal Carolina 4-0, I think, in a year that hasn't really had a whole lot of G5 teams looking like they're just going to be making a huge campaign, undeniable campaign to get the NY6 spot. I think Coastal Carolina, one of the teams that has a shot there. They've looked really impressive so far. They don't, you know, I don't know if they have anyone on the slate that's really going to jump out at you, but, you know, I think if they have a chance to run the table and maybe you don't have a lot of other teams that are doing that from the G5 level, I think they would have to get their due. So definitely intrigued to see how that one plays out.
Yeah, if nothing else, two fun offensive teams as well. Georgia Southern used the transfer portal to kind of skip two or three years of growing pains transitioning out of the triple option. They have Cougar alumnus Jeremy Singleton using his final year of eligibility as one of their top receivers. Also Kyle Vantries, who is a good quarterback on some not very good Buffalo teams previously. And obviously Grayson McCall in the Coastal offense. Very fun to watch. Wanted to also mention the only other one I have in that kind of 2:30 to 4 p.m. Central time slot, Wake Forest at Florida State. Like two teams that might be legitimately pretty good and two pretty fun offenses on both sides of the ball. I don't know if I would put that on your main screen over the two Big 12 games or even Georgia Southern Coastal, but would be a good second screen game. I didn't watch enough of Wake Forest Clemson last week, so I'm going to probably second screen that game this week, and then Florida State's just going to get like their brains beat in or vice versa.
All right, then as we get into the evening slate at 6 o'clock, AAC game one that does actually kind of intrigue me, and that is Cincinnati at Tulsa. Both, you know, fan bases that I feel like are kind of quietly confident as the schedule turns to conference play and have, you know, not that they have, neither has gotten through non-conference play unscathed, but I think both feeling relatively good about themselves. Tulsa after that close loss to Ole Miss, Cincinnati having won their last three games, including a three-score win over Indiana last week after the season opening loss at Arkansas. So, you know, if this game's, in Cincinnati, I think maybe this is one I'd have an easier time going, I think Cincinnati's just going to make that one fairly comfortable and not really competitive. But I don't know. It's not entirely out of the realm of possibility to me that Tulsa makes this one close at home. And you know, I'm really interested to see how both of these teams fare to open conference play.
Yeah, that was my first game I actually had in my notes in the slate. It's one I'm very interested in. And I think, to me, I wasn't so sure about Tulsa before the Ole Miss game and that they were able to do as much as they did, largely with their backup quarterback. I think that sold me. I think this is a legitimately good offense. I don't know if it's a legitimately good team yet, but it's a team capable for the first time in a few years of being carried by that offense. It had been a good long while since Philip Montgomery, who, you know, guy who's thought to be this great offensive mind, had put out anything really close to a good offense. But I would say this is an excellent Tulsa offense and a Cincy defense that, you know, the floor for Cincy's defense is probably a lot higher than a lot of program ceilings on that side of the ball, for being quite honest, but not the proven defense and not the proven secondary, more specifically, that they had a year ago. I mean, you can't help but, you know, take a step back when you lose three or four future pros on the back end. So I'm interested to see what Tulsa does. I think it will be Cincy's toughest test by a pretty good margin since that week one game at Arkansas. And gonna point out, like, I agree with you, by the way, if this was Tulsa at Cincinnati, I don't think we would be talking in nearly as intrigued tones about this game. Tulsa was a goal line stop away from winning at Cincy last year. I'm bringing that up because just that was one of the
that's fair.
One of the more bizarre. I'm bringing it up more just because I was just like, oh yeah, remember when Tulsa almost beat Cincy during their dream season? That would have been wild. But yeah, so I'm very interested in that one. What Cincy can do against what's looked like a really good Tulsa offense.
I definitely memory hold how close that game was last year when I talked about this one maybe not being competitive. It was in Cincinnati. So, yeah, I think a game that, you know, Cincinnati 9.5 is the line I'm seeing right now. I think if the Bearcats could make that happen, I'm sure that Luke Fickell will tell you he'd be absolutely thrilled. Another interesting game in the 6:30 evening time slot, North Carolina State at Clemson. Can't believe we're recommending a second ACC game. You know, but you see that Wolfpack team that is kind of the surprising 4-0, not the team you expect to see in the top 10 for facing it, and also 4-0 Clemson team. And you just saw the Tigers getting an absolute slobber knocker, just trading touchdown after touchdown with Wake Forest last week. NC State has been more of the defensive-minded team, so intrigued by the kind of clash of styles here, kind of strength versus strength matchup maybe. But at the same time, just, you know, seeing a program like NC State that has really struggled to be nationally relevant against a Clemson team that's obviously been extremely successful with a head coach that I personally find kind of unlikable. So definitely, as much as a Cougar fan, I just kind of have a weird thing towards NC State generally. But at the same time, definitely going to be wholeheartedly cheering for their football program against Clemson on Saturday evening.
Yeah, that if there were a better slate of games in this time slot, I might use that to justify just kind of pushing it aside and not talking about it. But I mean, it's two top 25 programs. I think the NC State offense versus Clemson defense matchup is a really good one, probably one of the best we'll have in this week's slate, if we're being honest. I mean, if you know even a little bit about the history of NC State football, it's been just at the biggest moment, just absolutely spitting up and choking. And it would be very, very out of character for them to win this game at Clemson, to beat Dabo at Dabo Stadium. And I for one, would welcome it, even if, like you, I have some weird feelings I can't totally shake about the Wolfpack.
So any other games from Saturday that intrigue you, Sam? That's really all I have in the evening slate. And then the night slate is three Pac-12 games that all I don't think are going to be that close. Anything else that was really worth mentioning?
I have West Virginia at the Cal College in Austin here, just because I think it would be very funny if West Virginia won that game. But I don't think it's especially likely that they will win that game. So, yeah, really, really not much else to talk about in the evening slate. And yeah, like you, don't really see any way that Arizona State at USC or Stanford at Oregon ends up being very competitive. I think if you're going to get your late night football fix this week, your better bet is probably the Friday night slate, if we're being quite honest.
Yeah. And then did also want to mention on Sunday, a game that was moved back to Sunday due to the hurricane in Florida is going to be SMU at UCF. The game will take place at noon Central on Sunday. Definitely one with some big conference implications. And, you know, kind of like we talked about with the ACC game and the strength versus strength, you got UCF's defense, which has looked pretty, respectable this year against an SMU offense that can definitely put up some points. And then on the other side of the ball, the UCF offense versus the SMU defense is the opposite of a strength versus strength. That is going to be the movable force versus the resistible object. So not quite sure. That's always the fun games. You never know how they're going to go when you have kind of strength versus strength and weakness versus weakness. You never know how that plays out. I feel like there's always a high degree of variability in those games. So, hate that getting this game moved due to the hurricane is going to be necessary. And obviously, more than football, we hope that everyone is doing okay. But just in terms of getting what should be a pretty compelling game in its own time slot with no other college football competition on Sunday, it does give you kind of the chance to highlight what should be a fun game.
I had two things for this one. One, obviously hate the circumstances that's under, would rather it be as part of, you know, a Saturday slate above all else, but don't hate that I can wake up and at 10 a.m. I'll have college football on a Sunday. And also, you mentioned that, you know, UCF offense versus SMU defense matchup and not being a strength for strength after us doing a lot of talking about strength for strength in games in this slate this week. I am so fascinated about which of those is going to give, whether UCF's passing offense is finally going to look good against a opponent with a pulse, or is SMU going to actually look like a good defense for at least 60 minutes? I'm just very fascinated to see which one of those happens.
All right. I think that's everything we've got for this episode. So we'll go ahead and cut it off there as we're now, a solid hour or so into this podcast. On our way out, as always, we want to give a hearty thank you to our Scott and Holman podcast Patreon supporters. Your generosity continues to be appreciated by both Sam and myself. If you are someone who likes the Scott and Holman podcast, you get a lot of joy and enjoyment out of it. And if you want to put some dollars behind the work that Sam and I do to put out this podcast on a weekly or bi-weekly basis, we would love for you to go to shpodcast.com/support. shpodcast.com/support. You will find a link to make a recurring monthly donation on Patreon, make a one-time donation via PayPal, or buy some merchandise. with our StreetSign logo on it. And as we mentioned at the top, you can also always support us by going to homefieldapparel.com and using the promo code Holman12 at checkout. We would love to hear from you, the podcast listener. You can email us, shpodcast@gmail.com, or you can tweet at us at shpodcast. That's it for us. If you made it all the way to the end, you are fantastic. And as always,
go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Vamos los Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
Go Cougs.
We ain't invited to the party. We had to kick the door in. No cap. No cap. No cap.